This morning I forgot it, Marvin, but this evening I have brought you this. You may want to try it on for size just to see what you think of it. You can choose whether or not you tell people why I've got that up there at the front. But anyway, it's so good of you to give so much of your time on your one free day to be with us. And let's just pray for Marvin as he prepares to speak to us. Marvin, in the opening block of worship, somebody came to me with just a phrase of scripture. And this may be a phrase to encourage you in the ministry that God has given you. But it also may be a word for all of us tonight. So allow me to offer this as I just speak the words of Jesus. With God, nothing is impossible. Lord, I pray that that will indeed be a word of life for Marvin. I pray it will be a word of hope, a word you'll use to extend the horizons of what he can currently see in this city. A word of hope that will extend the horizons of what he can currently see in his own life and the life of the people with whom he works. Lord, maybe it's a word of a life and hope for those relationships in the political and city world that are challenging, those who even perhaps oppose him. Lord, with you, nothing is impossible. We just pray now that your spirit will alight on Marvin, that you'll anoint him afresh with new energy for this evening's message. Lord, I know that we're going to hear his heart for this great city tonight. I pray in that we will also hear your heart. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Okay, thanks very much. I haven't spoken at one church twice in a day in a long, long time. So it's worried. I think I used all my best material this morning. No, it's very nerve-wracking. So the dog collar is because some people have tried to make some hay out of the fact I'm a Christian and I'm the mayor. And one of the anonymous trolls that's out there who publishes a newsletter started to call me Reverend Reese. And the pictures they mock up of me and start tweeting around, I'm in a dog collar. So I figured I may as well just go and get the picture and send it out myself. We'll do that tomorrow with my head of comms. But I'll talk to him tonight. He might advise me against it. So I thought what I've been asked to talk about was Bristol being a city of hope, which is a phrase, an idea, a meaning that seems to have been growing in the city over recent weeks and months. Actually, can I ask who was here this morning? Okay, not too many, so we're okay. and it's been growing. And it's something that a number of people have spoken about explicitly and have been looking for a way of sharing it with the city. But it's also something that's been growing quite organically and naturally and spiritually. And I'll tell you a story about that just very shortly. But I'll just give you a couple of examples of how critical I think this is to the city. So at the moment, some of you may know that the churches have been responding to the homeless crisis, like street sleeping homelessness. And in November, I met with a group of people from churches, from Business West, a number of voluntary sector organizations who work on mental health, substance misuse, homelessness. And we were in a room in City Hall. And I asked them we've developed this idea in the city of make me a big offer, and then make a big ask of me. So come with your vision for Bristol. What do you want to achieve? Make that offer to me. And then tell me what I need to do to enable you to do that. And the big offer I asked them to make me, that no one who had the ability to accept help would have to spend a night on the street between January the 1st and March the 1st. Now, this is only November. It's a very big offer. And then I said, go away and work out what you need from me and anyone else in the city to make that possible. Now, that was always going to be a big aim. But one of the responses that's developed around that was that churches have opened up their halls. So over a period of 4 weeks, 7 churches are working together over a period of 4 weeks, and each one opens itself up on one night of the week, and people go and sleep there. My church, Hope Chapel, down the hill, I was there a couple of weeks ago. I saw these guys having breakfast downstairs there on it. I was there the night I was at Tyndale Baptist Church. I think it's Baptist, at the bottom of, at the top of Whiteleys Road. And one of the guys came up to me who was sleeping on the streets. And his phrase to me was one of the most amazing and yet one of the saddest phrases I've heard someone say. And I mean, these things happen, but he said to me, this is the first time I've laughed since I can remember. There'd been no joy in his life. And yet, by having somewhere to sleep, the church puts on food, they play games, they watch DVDs, they have a warm night's sleep, they get up, they breakfast together. Now he's laughing. And he told me, this is a guy from Avonmouth who's ended up on the streets. He told me that that his life had just imploded. But he said, every night now, we're giggling like children. And this guy's in his 40s. You know, one must be wondering where life has gone. How do you end up 40-something years old, sleeping on the streets, wondering how your life is going to turn the corner? It's tragic. But he had hope brought back into his life in those interactions. Human connectivity. He still existed. The other story I'll share with you is a bit more tragic that I didn't share this morning, but I think is a challenge to Bristol. And it was about 4 years ago. There was a young Somali boy, used to hang around on Stapleton Road in a group of young men. Now, I know that people would have seen this group of young men as a threat. They're hanging around. Young people can sometimes be seen as a threat when they're hanging around. Anyway, they found him hanging in the Adventure Playground, I think it was. And my brother is a lot younger than me. He knows the kid. And I he was telling me about it. And this young guy didn't have any hope, he said. He just thought this was his life. This was it. He was 17 years old. He thought he was going to be stuck forever. He had ambition. He wanted to go somewhere, but he had no belief that anything would happen for him. And he was talking like this quite often, apparently. So for the outside world, he was seen as a threatening young black man on Stapleton Road, hanging out with kids, maybe even seen as aggressive. But inside, he was a hopeless young man who thought life was no longer worth living because it wasn't going anywhere for him. And at the time that I was hearing that story, I thought, how can it be that in a city like Bristol, you know, with a city of street art, Banksy, you know, trip hop, we export our culture, we're the only city outside the southeast that makes a net financial contribution to the treasury. We've got 2 world-class universities. I was in China just recently. They're all talking about our high-tech industries. This fantastic city that we tell the world about, one that I've often characterized as a city of balloons, bridges, and Brunel. How can it be that there are people here who genuinely don't see in all this wealth and all this dynamism, hope for their lives? So this term hope has been one that's been hanging around with me for a long time. I shared this morning that I ran for mayor in 2012, and very early doors because it was the presidential election at the same time, and maybe for obvious reasons, anyone was looking for any tag they could say that I'm trying to copy Barack Obama. So I stayed well away from hope. I didn't mention the presidential election at all. But this idea of hope being a fundamental feature of what it means to be able to get up in the morning was one that's always been with me. In fact, when I was at the BBC, I was a journalist at the BBC, I did pitch when I was there. It was one of the reasons I left, because I couldn't send any of my documentaries to them, that we should do a documentary on hope. Because my point was, I'd been in Uganda, actually with Mike Hill and a few others, and I said, you know, and I was asking this question, what is it, what's the source of your hope, you know? And I was really interested in people that come from different worldviews, different faiths, different backgrounds. What is the source of their hope? And I didn't want to just drive in and say, your hope is Jesus, and give them a t-shirt, you know? But it was a genuine question. You know, what's it all moving towards for you? And I wanted the BBC to investigate. Anyway, they didn't do it. So I've had this question for a long time. Now, since when I was a candidate, and I was very careful about my candidacy, because in terms of me being a Christian, I didn't want to run around and say, hey, I'm a Christian, vote for me. That's cheap. At the same time, I will say I'm a Christian, right? And I'm a product of Bristol churches from the age of 8 and Hope and Woody's and so forth. And I even came to this church, which people from the morning will know about, some of my traumatic experience here with my T-shirt. But I've always had this sense. And Rob Scott Cook had said to me in some of our, because I've been meeting Rob quite regularly, he said, I really, as Rob's a real man of prayer, he said, I think Bristol should be a city of hope. And we started talking about this a little bit. Then I'll give you a sequence of events that make me think that maybe this is something we need to pick up and really think deep about and test and then work out what it means practically. So Rob Scott Cook raises this idea of being a city of hope. We have a meeting down at City Hall with 25, 30 leaders from Bristol's churches. Andy Street organises it, if any of you know Andy Street. There's a whole bunch of people from a whole range of backgrounds there. Talking about, actually, we were talking about the big offers and the big asks the church could make with Bristol. So I'll give you a couple of examples. One was around homelessness. The other one was that churches have organised, because to say that any school, any primary school that does not have a breakfast club, they will support that primary school to have a breakfast club. We have an issue around child poverty, nutritional poverty in the city, and you know that getting access to a good quality diet gets you off to a good start in life. So it's amazing testimony that the churches are stepping into that gap where we no longer have the finances to do that in local government. So the churches are stepping up in that. So we talked about that, and we talked about how the church can begin to raise finance. But in that meeting just after I left, Rob again talked to the room about hope and Bristol being a city of hope. Then I was speaking at this event. Bristol is formerly a Rockefeller 100 resilient city. There are 100 cities around the world supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. And the idea is, how do we do resilience? Social resilience, political resilience, economic, environmental. And by resilience, they mean against those everyday challenges to holding ourselves together. Inequality, educational inequality, so forth. These everyday things that sap on our ability to keep it together, both as individuals and as a society. But also they're obviously looking at the big shocks that come along as well. Financial collapse, flooding, climate change. How are we going to be resilient in the face of all of those? And at the end of that meeting, I hadn't scripted it, but actually I said to the room of, you know, city leaders and so forth, I said, well, actually, maybe we should welcome our challenges, because those kind of everyday challenges and those shocks, those are the things that make people. And maybe in the challenges that come to Bristol that we want to be resilient in the face of, we will find out who we actually are as a city, and it will make us stronger. And I left it at that, and there was a decent response from people there. Then, next event, I meet with some church leaders once a month down at my church, Hope, in the prayer center, and we meet and pray and read. And I ended up reading out this passage we read tonight from Romans. What an incredible sequence of events, right? Don't despise your sufferings, because sufferings produce perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. And I threw myself back to what I just said at Resilient Cities without reflecting on that passage when I read it at the time. That through that sequence of events, if we want to get to hope, what we're told in the Bible is that there is a sequence of experiences that take us to that. And we know that to be the case. Historically, every story we hear about in the Bible of individuals and groups of people coming into the fullness of who they are comes about through trial. It comes about through the wilderness. It comes about through testing. Now, what I would say is that's an ancient truth, and it's not simply contained in the words of the Bible and applicable to people and groups mentioned in the Bible. Surely it's applicable to us today, and surely it's applicable to a city like Bristol, that there is something that we must go, there's some kind of journey we must go on to find out what our character is. We must get that perseverance, that resilience. But what is our character? And when we find out what our character is, then we will find access to our hope for Bristol, but also, I believe, how Bristol can be a hope for the world. And I came this morning, and this is the spine tingly maybe for you. I got presented with this morning when I came here, and it's called Hope Rising. And it's by an artist called Paul Belton from Manchester. And you can probably tell the story more. He felt he needed to paint this and send this down. For me, I don't know Paul Belton. And he doesn't know about the conversations we've been having in Bristol. And yet I come to this church this day and I'm presented with a piece of art called Hope Rising from an artist in Manchester. And I don't know what that means. It's amazing. I've said to people one of the surest sources of strength I have in my role of mayor, as being the mayor, is finding comfort, strength in the fact that I'm smaller than the job. But isn't that always the case? You know, we're called to something and then we grow into it. And that's for me as an individual. It's for us as a city. And I've seen that sequence of stories and making me think that not just to say, hey, play with this idea, but maybe there's something being said to us right now about what we are supposed to be. But like I'd say, it's not just about being a hope inside the city boundaries to people that live here. I think the world is in a pretty desperate place at the moment. Excuse me if any of you have voted for Donald Trump. But I think the echoes that come out of his presidency at the moment are really challenging for me in terms of where the world is at right now and the desperation of people who have voted in that way. So I ask you to really think about that. My ask and offer is also based on a conversation I had with an incredible man called Arnie Graf, who comes out of the civil rights movement. He's a Jewish American who was involved in the civil rights movement. And he said something to me, and I've never read the book, but he said it's from Paul Tillich, the theologian. And if I get this phrase right, he said, power abhors a vacuum. He said, if you leave a vacuum, something will fill it. It doesn't stay a vacuum. Now, what I'm seeing around the world at the moment is a hopelessness. I'm seeing people who are desperate for someone to say, this is what it's all about. And I don't mean, again, I'm not looking at the easy Jesus is the answer type thing. I mean, what are we for? What's the economy for? This is now a question that people are asking. And I shared this morning, we're not just here to be a cog in the wheels of national GDP. You know, we're not here just to be consumers. You know, we're not here just to keep the system going. You know, there must be something more profound than that. And I think people are asking that question. And I think it's finding expression. I was saying that actually part of, even a few years ago, people were asking this question about national identity. What does it mean to be British? Who are we? There's a lostness about how we understand who we are. And if no one steps into that vacuum, something will fill it. And the offer and the challenge is that I think the church has to step up and be involved in that conversation. And again, it's not an abstract. This is politics. This is real economics for me. This is about taking control of what is the economy for? What is politics for? Where is it taking us? Because if I look around and look at the big political narratives at the moment, I don't know where they're taking us. It's just more of the same. So while I wouldn't have been a fan of Trump, and while I don't have an unqualified adoration for the EU, I don't. What I see, the alternatives were, you know, I found myself almost on the side of the banal just because I didn't like the alternative, which I found horrifically unpalatable. But that doesn't mean I was satisfied with the banal, the status quo. It just meant that I thought the solutions being put forward by Trump and the others were the wrong answers to the right questions. So we have to step in, and if we don't, I think the challenge for us is that we will be found wanting. Our specific challenges in Bristol, I'll list them to you, and again, it's about what can the church play. We have a homeless crisis. What are those things that I think we'll work through as a city that will test us? And that we have to find a way through. Homelessness is a crisis in Bristol. Many of you, if you're students here, you'll know this, or if you've got children looking for places to live, you'll know this. We've got 10,000 people on the housing waiting list. We have street homeless. We have invisible homeless. Someone in my church, I ended up on Points West about it. Someone in my church turned up one Sunday morning, just before Christmas, in a private let. The landlord has to sell the house. Her husband, two children, losing their home into temporary accommodation. But not only did she lose her home, but she was a good neighbor. There was a neighbor next door to her, had early stage dementia, was really concerned about losing her because they were carers. Now he's going to turn to the National Health Service and so forth. Our communities are being undermined by this. It's a challenge we have to take on. Health inequalities. We know famously there's a 10-year life expectancy difference across the richest and the poorest in Bristol. But even more challenging than that is healthy years life expectancy. People born in the poorest parts of Bristol become so sick they're unable to work. Something like 16 years before those born in the wealthiest. And in some senses, that's more challenging because I don't want to be cold about it. But if someone dies, they die. If someone becomes physically disabled, their family become carers. They need to go on public services and so forth. There's a challenge around that. That is kind of an invisible. It's not often cited, that example. We have education inequalities in the Bristol. A report came out recently that was kind of thrown forward to about 6-7 years ago. Bristol has among the most racially segregated schools in England. Look at our culture, the brand that we tell, the story we tell to the outside world about who we are and the reality of what life is like inside this city. Now, we wouldn't say we're not designing that. It's just the way it happens. But the challenge for us is to say, do we see that as a challenge we need to take on? Or do we say, well, that's just the way it is and we'll live with it? Mental health, I worked in public mental health and I've seen the challenges of people being left behind. And the, you know, our Department of Health say that 50% of lifetime mental health problems start before the age of 14. And 50% of those are preventable. Which is why we made a commitment, and I've made a commitment, to trying to make sure that every primary school kid in Bristol gets mental health intervention before the point of sickness. So we build their resilience early doors. They're aware of how to build healthy relationships and they can navigate the challenges that come with life, that resilience that comes in, that sense of hope to get through the next day. But how do we mobilize around this? We have all these huge challenges, shrinking resources. What's the solution? And one of my abilities to go into work each day and to face the budget I have to pass tomorrow, which I shared this morning. I'm passing a budget tomorrow. I do not defend it on the grounds of it is what I would want to do. Because it's a budget between which is the least worst option I can take here. Shrinking financial base, growing population, increasing need. What am I going to cut? What cuts will have the least impact on the most vulnerable people while at the same time investing in those things that will build us a strong economic future? So stepping into that, how we have hope in the middle. But through all of those challenges, there's something that comes back to me again that I wouldn't necessarily share in a council chamber, but I'll share here. That if we find out who we are, what our character is, and we pursue that character cannot be knocked off track by those kind of challenges that come. It cannot be knocked off track by those challenges. We will be who we are in the middle of all that. And more than that, our character will, as a city, will be made stronger through those challenges. Because to me, that's what I'm hearing in the Bible here. Perseverance, character, hope. So in some sense, while I would not go and say I welcome the way it's come about, I'm thinking, how do we, as a city, and how do we with the church, understanding, insight, support of the Spirit, wisdom of God, and all those things that can come, how do we help the city, as a city, 450,000 people, find out what it is about, what it should be doing, and in the middle of all the challenges that are going to come, fully come into the character of what it is and who it is and what it is for. And we've got to take control of that narrative. We've got to be proactive and almost, some might say, aggressive about it. What did Jesus say about taking the kingdom with force? Because if we don't, something else will. And I say to everyone here, and I just felt to say as well that it doesn't matter where you come from. If you're in Bristol, you're in Bristol, and it's been done on purpose. And by being in the city, you are part of this narrative. And I suppose my appeal is, and my offer and my challenge is, that you've been sent here with an offer to Bristol. You've been sent here with a contribution, with a skill, with an energy. And like the, you know, and I would say that has to be put to use in Bristol to contribute to the city where you are. And I can't reference the Bible. The passage, I think, is from Jeremiah, but it says, work for the good of the city. And this is what we need people to be doing right now. I'll just finish with one passage. I'm a big fan of Martin Luther King. My first postgrad was Black American Politics, which is where I really kind of learnt my theology, really. it's phenomenal. But this is, I worked in Washington for a year. I worked at Sojourners, if any of you have heard of that, a guy called Jim Wallace, quite well known. I was an intern. And I shared an office with a man called Emery Searcy, who was a Black Baptist from Atlanta. So he knew the King family. He's an older man. He's passed away now. But this is from I See the Promised Land. It's Martin Luther King's, it's the final speech he gave, actually. And he says, and then I got to Memphis, and some began to say the threats all talk about the threats that were out. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and he's allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. And I just read that there before I come. I bought the book on off chance. And what comes out to me is that selfless hope. If we have that kind of selfless hope, that in the middle of all the threats, in the middle of all the challenges, and this was real, because the next day King was shot dead. If we have that hope in the middle of all the threats and all the challenges, that there is a call, there is a God, there is something working itself out. The subtitle of the civil rights movement was to save the soul of America. But if we have a sense of that call and that purpose, and we have that selfless hope around the contribution we can make to it, then I believe, I have to believe that we can do something about these challenges that seem so complicated and so insurmountable. So I need you, the city needs you, and I welcome your contribution and your wisdom and your talents. Thank you.
So I said this morning, if there's anybody here who's not moved, challenged, provoked, inspired, and at least a little bit excited, we do have medical staff around the room to check for a pulse. Please don't leave church without a pulse this evening. That didn't work as well as I was hoping it was going to, but never mind.